It's time for Cofield and Company. Live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Yeah, here we go, 3 o'clock, Cofield and Company. TI is the location, right on the strip. Free parking out back. Willie Ramirez is with us. What's up, Willie?
What's up, Steven? How are you?
I'm good, man. You okay? You're one of your guys, Pete DeBoer, got fired, so we want to open with that. That's I don't know that it's shocking, but my God, for the amount of success that guy has, he loses a lot of jobs.
Yeah, what is it, 6 conference championships in 7 years? I mean, I suppose I get it. You know, hey, we can get that far, but we can't get any further. Still hasn't won a Stanley Cup, but, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it takes some time to, I guess, I don't know. I'm not a general manager, but I know that they did deal with a few injuries here and there to start, but they were healthy when they got done, when they lost to the Oilers. I know that, I'm sure that it raised some eyebrows with their franchise goaltender, Jake Oettinger, when he pulled him after let in 2 goals in the decisive game, and then called him out in the postgame press conference. Sort of just put it. I mean, he didn't put it all on him, but for the most part, you know, said that the Oilers have had his number, going back to last year's Western Conference Finals, and then letting up 2 goals right away. So it was a trigger happy move in terms of, you know, switching out the goaltenders. The bottom line is I don't know if that's the main reason. I think it could be that he made it to 3 straight Western Conference Finals, but couldn't get to the Stanley Cup. Lost to the Golden Knights and then twice to the Oilers. So Pete DeBoer's out, and he'll land on his feet. I was making note to Griffin before the show that I don't think that they did it on purpose because they were the last ones to get eliminated, but there's no openings. So, I think any team that did their firing is done. Obviously, Edmonton and Florida, they're not firing their guys when the Stanley Cup is over. So I firmly believe that, let's say that there's 3-4 openings by New Year's Eve, maybe by the All-Star break or Olympic break, whatever's next. What are we, in 25, 26 is the Olympic break? So he'll land on his feet. He'll get another job. He'll be all right.
I mean, this is the way of the world in the NBA and especially the NHL, right? I mean, bad coaches get fired midseason. Bad coaches get fired all the time. Good coaches get fired all the time. And sometimes, just like in the NBA situation with Tibbs, feel like a team may be kind of worn out with the coach, or a coach is kind of worn out as welcome. That was a move that a lot of people were irked about. And maybe there was a little player revolt. Maybe they're just tired of him and they need a fresh face in there. I mean, hell, we saw Indiana win last night. It's not like Rick Carlisle's had one job his entire career. He had 2 years that he spent nearly 25 years ago in Detroit. Had a 4-year stint in Indiana, then in Dallas for a long time, won a title there, and now back in Indiana again, and maybe on his way to a surprising title. And I say surprising because they were such big dogs going into the game last night, plus 500 on the series, and just like the Knicks series, they did it again. They were down big, and they were down big late, and they came all the way back. A couple of mistakes by OKC. The door was left open, and it wasn't only Hallie, as they're calling him, Tyrese Halliburton, but other guys were heroes. But obviously, Captain Clutch, King of Clutch, Mr. Clutch came through again with the ball in his hands in the final 5 seconds.
It was a beautiful sight to see with our guy Paul G out for dinner, and we were watching the game while we were eating, and I kept saying, it's not over, it's not over, here they come, it's not over, here they come, they're coming. And we watched that shot, and it was unbelievable. It was a quiet little restaurant, but it was quite loud as the waning moments ticked away.
Was that right? You went out to dinner with Paul Gutierrez, huh? Okay, what'd you get to dinner? Didn't get that invite.
None of your business.
Oh, really? You're keeping it top secret?
Yep.
Okay.
May have found a spot way out yonder. Where?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe that's a bet payoff location.
Especially
if you like it, because I owe you a dinner.
Yeah. Well, we're definitely going to the spot that we know where we're going for my dinner. I don't know where we're going for year two, but
well, it's going to be pricey.
The beautiful thing, the beautiful thing is, well, it's not beautiful. The trouble is that neither Griffin, Kemp, or Willie Ramirez pressed the issue on Monday or Thursday show to get a bet in, although we might be the only two in the entire building that I know of that said the Pacers. And y'all just were, no. I don't know what, I don't remember what Griffin's argument was, but he told me today, he goes, no, because I said, there was one person. And he goes, yeah, your boy had it. I said, wait a minute, what about me? And he forgot, like yesterday when we had Chad Anderson, I was like, well, let's go back. The argument I've been standing on since 2023's in-season tournament. Everyone was just shaming me. No, Oklahoma City's too good. Yeah, well.
But you're coming out here guns a-blazing. You have a 1-0 lead. You want to bet it? I'll take OKC. That's straight up?
No, because I would have wanted odds. Like, I would have wanted 2 dinners to 1 or something. You know what I mean? I mean, it was a big dog. I mean,
straight up. Right now. Let's go.
For the series?
Yes.
Wow, big pause there.
Well, I was actually thinking...
That don't hurt yourself when you
You're an idiot if you actually just take it straight up, because Pacers are still minus 320 in the series. So I guess, I could owe you dinner and a soup.
Nah...
We could go get a soup and a sandwich as the second part of it.
Soup comes with the dinner.
You get a separate soup and sandwich.
No.
A dessert?
That's
a
what
dessert.
I'm saying. Is that what I'm saying? Is somewhere. Yesterday was it plus 730 or plus?
Well, it was plus 500.
Nevertheless.
Now you're plus 260. You're still in the catbird seat.
Still 2-1.
Yeah.
So.
Weird hesitation. These comebacks keep happening, and it's not just with the Pacers. I mean, it's happened with the Pacers, what, now 4 or 5 times. Mm. Why do you think they're happening?
I don't. Is it the depth of these teams? Is it the tenacity? I've noticed, though, that it's more so in the Eastern Conference than it is the Western Conference. I think 10 times now, twice in the Western Conference, Pacers, Knicks, Pacers, Knicks, Pacers, Pacers, Knicks. Pacers and Knicks were the teams that did it in the East. And the 2 times in the West, Thunder were down by 29 in the Western quarters against Memphis, and the Denver Nuggets did it. I don't know if there's complacency is settling in with the teams that are leading
kids these days,
or if we're just seeing the depth play out.
You want to go with that angle? Back in my day, we know how to protect the lead, and our heroes could protect the lead. There were never big comebacks, except there were. But it has been in this case, because the exact number is what, 10 rallies from 15 points or more, in this postseason.
Right. And 8 of them were the Eastern Conference by 2 teams, the Pacers and the Knicks. So the other 2 were in the Western Conference, the Thunder and the Nuggets. 2 of the teams that have that of the 4 that have done it are in the finals. So it goes to show, you know, depth and sort of a mindset that probably starts at the top that, hey, we're not done until that final horn blows.
I didn't see anything specific in last night's game that allowed – aside from good play and some missed shots on the side of OKC, I didn't think OKC played terrible defense. They weren't awful on the boards. And really, it kind of came down to the last about 8 minutes when it started to get tight. I don't think it was the officiating, because I think that would be the argument a lot of times. Oh, the officials are kind of affecting the game. They want comebacks, so they start making calls, and you make sure that a game is close. I didn't really see that. I did think there was a weird, and no one's going to remember this, I thought there was a really bizarre plus 1 on a foul, but it was like 9.5 minutes left, and the game at that point I think was like 11 or 12, but Nembhard was driving the right side of the lane, got tied up before he even took a step, took 2 steps, was fouled in the process, and then the defender moved off, and then he finished the shot. I'm like, he wasn't in the process of a shot there. So that was a made basket plus 1, so you know, at the end of the game, when you lose on a buzzer beater and you had, you know, 3 points given up on a weird plus 1 foul. But again, I don't think that's any kind of agenda. I don't think officials are out to try to make the games close. It's just you've got the other thing I will point to is I do think it's interesting when star players are given a chance to rest. And at the start of the fourth quarter, SGA was out for a while it got a little tighter and tighter. It was still, you know, with 3 minutes left, you're still talking about 8 and 7 point lead. So I'm not going to blame it on, you know, the bench work by Mark Daniel, but there are a couple things in there that maybe you could point to. But bottom line is, you had, what, 2 Nembhard threes. Miles Turner had a 3. Obi Toppin had 2 threes. They started nailing threes from all over the place, and I actually thought they played pretty good defense. The only thing they could have done better on the final shot with Halliburton is make sure that the ball got out of his hands. Like, don't let him have the ball, or don't let him cross midcourt with the ball. Double him. But there was some action on a backdoor cut that, you know, may have destroyed them too if they had tried to double with Caruso. Caruso faked a double and then slid off a little bit, and then the shot goes up.
The other thing you can look at is playoff defense. Some of the worst defenses of this postseason are the teams that have allowed the comebacks, including the Pacers.
Yeah.
Pacers are 13th in scoring defense during the postseason. The Grizzlies, who I mentioned, it happened to them. The Knicks, it happened to them. The Nuggets, it happened to them. They're all in the bottom six of team defense, scoring defense in the postseason.
Up next, we're going to talk to Mark McMillan. He was watching the game last night. He's been in Philly most of the week. He made it back to go out to Raiders camp as well. So we have a lot to get into with one of our NFL insiders here on a Football Friday. Yeah, it's Football Friday all year long. If you want to come on down to Treasure Island, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar is where we are right now. But a great place in the property is relatively new. They built out the whole area called The Cove. It's a bar and arcade, features a full-service bar. That's why it's called Bar and Arcade, right? 27 exciting games, 19 TVs. You got air hockey, shuffleboard, duck pin bowling, golf simulator. They got a bunch of simulators in there. About 8,000 square feet. Great hub for entertainment and fun, and it's right here at the Treasure Island.
Former NFL cornerback and Next Level Chef contestant Mark McMillan joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Chef Mark is in. Where in the world is he? I know he was across the country for at least a few days. Mark, what's up? It's Cofield and Willie.
What's going on, my man? I'm back from Philly, man. What an amazing time for a great cause. One of the best safeties ever to play the game, my guy, Brian Dawkins.
So tell me the whole purpose of the event. I know it's for a good charity. There's a theme to it. You got golf. There were cool pictures. So what went down?
Yeah, it was good, man. He wanted the island feel to it. He said, kind of reminded him of being at the Pro Bowl. So he wanted everybody to come and kind of in the Hawaiian feel. So he had everything Hawaiian, from whole pigs to poke to lobsters to shrimp. He had a – man, that bill had to be at least about $10,000, all the food that he had there. It was a great he had everything flown in fresh, too. So, man, B-Dog did it first class, prime rib. They even had smoked tuna. I've never seen a smoked tuna before.
What?
And then, yeah, and they sliced it and rubbed it down with these with this blackened seasoning. So he kind of piqued my interest with that one. I was like, bro, you went out, you hit a home run on this, this blackened tuna.
Who made the whole hog and how was it?
The country club made the whole hog, and nice. I know a lot of people were like, "Man, I don't eat no pig." I was like, "Taste a little bit of that booty right there, man. taste some of them hams right there." They were like, "Man, this is really good." They did a good job. They cooked it for like 18 hours overnight. Sliced it open from the middle. I sent you a picture of it, and man, it was really good, really tasty. And then obviously, you know, I had to bring my barbecue sauce to turn it up another notch, and made some sales right there on the spot, man.
Oh, look at you. I saw the Fanatic, and I saw Tasty Cakes. It's about as Philly as you can get.
Oh, man, I had a great time. A shout-out to my guy, John Brazier. He works with the Phillies. He's been with the Phillies since I was playing with the Eagles. Mm. So we go way back, and he also always makes sure I get a good seat. And the lady that was in our suite, man, she recognized who I was, and she ordered up Tasty Cakes, pretzels. They even brought the Fanatic up there, man, which is really cool, and one of the best mascots in the game, in my opinion.
Did they? You said they cooked it for 18 hours. Did they do it properly, where they do it in the hole in the ground under the leaves and everything?
You know, I don't know if they dug a hole. It's a country club now, Willie. They,
yeah, that
they
don't matter.
No holes on the country.
No, but there's ways. I mean, if they're doing a luau or they're doing some themed, there's an area where they can dig. It doesn't have to be that deep. But I've been to Hawaiian ranches where they do that, and they do it overnight. That's the proper way you do it, and it goes under the ground, and it's in this heat.
It's very demanding, Mark. He's very demanding. Wants a Kahlua pig done the right way.
Willie, this is a different kind of country club, man. This ain't the backyard barbecue. This is a different kind of country club, man. This is a couple of $100,000 to join this. I don't think they're going to be digging in any dirt.
Kahlua pork. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, they did. They did a really good job. So I had a blast, man. Just even though the Phillies lost, it's always good to go back, man, and hang out with the boys. I got a chance to finally meet Brandon Graham in person, man. One of the nicest guys that you could ever meet, and you know, until he puts on that helmet. But he's enjoying retirement. He had a golf coach out there. He brought his own personal golf coach. He's like, man, I don't know what to do with myself after football, but I'm gonna learn this golf game.
Were you over at the facility? You were at the Eagles facility.
No, he came to the golf tournament. So, you know, a lot of guys, Ike Reese, Hugh Douglas, one of your guys, you know, you're a Jet guy. So Hugh Douglas was there, Steve, and Mike Quick, Harold Carmichael. It was some really good guys there, man. So I'm just excited just to be a part of it, man. And Merrill Reese, the voice of the Philadelphia Eagles for centuries, was still out there. I think Merrill was like 70-something years old.
No, I meant, are they? They have nothing going on. Like the Raiders have their OTAs or whatever, you know, and where they didn't have anything going on. You didn't go over to the facility while you were there.
Yeah, I was at the facility with the Raiders. Was it yesterday? I think it was yesterday.
Oh, you're back. Okay.
Yeah, I'm back in town.
Okay.
So I got a chance to see the guys run around. You know, got a chance to finally talk to my guy Marcus Robb, who's the safety coach for the Raiders. So that was pretty impressive. And you know, a lot of the people are focused on the defensive backs and Genty and you know, obviously Geno Smith. But, man, I was more focused on the offensive linemen. I really like the way those guys are getting after it, man. And, you know, Jackson, you know, I really love the way that these guys are looking and getting after it. And they're just in shorts, but they still look good.
Well, before we get to, you know, the menial conversation, the little stuff, there is one important issue that we're carrying over from yesterday. It was National Ketchup Day. And we were debating as to what ketchup belongs on and what it 100% doesn't belong on. And we said, well, Grillin will be on tomorrow, so he definitely should have to weigh in. I was firm no on any kind of steak and eggs. Ketchup does not belong on either one. Where are you with ketchup?
Yeah, you can't put ketchup and steak? That is a no-brainer. First of all, your steak don't need any seasoning. Just a little salt and pepper. If you're doing the steak right. And eggs, I don't know. I see a lot of, you know, guys putting ketchup on their eggs, but that's a hard no for me, man. I've even kind of gone away from dipping my French fries in ketchup, man. I'm kind of going away from ketchup, man. Only ketchup I use for is to start off my barbecue sauce, but ketchup on steak, I hope one of your listeners are out there with some ketchup on some steak. So we can have a nice little debate about that. That steak's probably so dry and tough.
So, Mark, yesterday we were talking about I got like a couple of tubs of ketchup for a cookout, and I'm like, I don't use ketchup. I don't like ketchup. So now what can I use it for the rest of the summer if I don't have people over for burgers? You mentioned one of them, barbecue sauce. What else do you use ketchup for if you're going to do? Willie was mentioned as a binder, maybe some other kind of sauces.
No, I don't use it as a binder. You know, when I use mustard as a binder for my ribs and maybe some chicken and obviously my infused olive oil. But, man, Steve, if you got that much ketchup, man, you might as well save that for Halloween and act like you got some fake blood coming out your mouth.
I know, right? That's it. You're right, because I'm not going to use it. So if I don't make a lot of barbecue sauce, then it's going to be fake blood on some sort of costume. Tell me what you thought about last night with Halliburton. He did it again, and I know we argue on this show about is there such a thing as clutch. The guy did it again.
Yeah, I know people are like it. Even announcers like, you know, he needs to show up. He's not showing up. You know, he still had good numbers. His assists, I think he had like over 10 assists, which he's getting players involved, which that's the kind of player he is. And then, obviously, during the end of the game, you know, he does it again. He hits the big shot with 0.03 seconds to go to beat the best team with the record in the NBA. And man, I say one thing about the Pacers. They have been more battle-tested, I would say, than the Oklahoma Thunder because they kind of breeze through it. But, man, Indiana has been in some dogfights, and it showed last night, man. Every guy stepped up and came through.
Well, they have in terms of being in dogfights, but here's the thing. They played the Bucks, they played the Cavs, they played the Knicks. They went 5-5-6. So they've been in dogfights in terms of the opponents, but they're dusting them off. Five games, and six games. That's pretty good for a team that – many probably had written off in the first round and definitely had written off in the second round.
Yeah, because they don't really have a superstar on that team if you look at it. They just have some guys out there. I would call these guys like junkyard dogs. These guys just come in. They don't worry about their minutes. They don't worry about who's getting the praise or whatever. You look at Hallenberg. He's supposed to be that superstar, but he never cries, never pouts about not getting the ball or not getting his shots. But you see, when they really needed the basketball, they needed a shot, they went to their guy, Hallenberg, and he delivered on the road. Can you – man, that was a big time. That's like hitting a field goal with no time left in the game for the Super Bowl or something like that. So, man, that kid, man, he's got some balls, man. I give him that.
The word clutch is probably overused, but I wanted to lean on you and your playing experience. When you played college football and in the NFL, was there a guy on the other side you remember forever as like, man, I don't want that person to have to affect the game at the very end because they always seem to beat us or they're always clutch?
John Elway. You know, that was easy. John Elway, man. I played him in Philly. Obviously, we had a really good physical defense. We really got after him. But in Kansas City, you know, obviously we played him four times. I was there for 2 years. And even when we're up like 14 or 17, as a defensive unit, we were like, man, if we don't score like, you know, if we don't get them up by 24, somehow, some way, this guy's going to do it. And I was part of one of those games where they were attacking me. I was the guy that they were attacking, and they ended up scoring. They didn't score on me, but they drove down and caught like four passes on me. And we actually won the game with no time left on the clock where Pete Stojanovic kicked a field goal. But John Elway, man, is one of those guys that you're like, man, if he has the ball last, they're going to win.
Once again, speaking with Mark Grillin McMillan, former NFL player and now celebrity chef and, of course, part of the company. So, Mark, did Gilbert Arenas make some comments and take something a little too far this week?
Oh, man, you know, man, as males, you know, we as athletes, we got that testosterone still in our genes, but why were you talking about another man's hips? You know, I'm like, come on, bro. You're like, you should be more worried about your son and his health and, you know, getting that kid back together. Gil just takes it too far, man. But it's for clicks, I guess. I know a lot of people will be coming at Gil. But, man, you just took it a little too far saying the man is basically he called him a – I can't say it on the air, but
– That's what he called him.
He called him – yeah. It wasn't cool, man. I've said some things to players I played against, but I never questioned their manhood. In my opinion, Cat was balling in every series. He'd had grit series, you know, and hit some big-time shots. But when you start talking about a man's body and his hips, why are you breaking down this man's hips? What are you looking at?
Well, and not only that, it's one thing to use the B word, and then you're breaking down his body shape and his curves, but where he could find himself in trouble these days in 2025 is then he went as far as to say he's built like a WNBA player. So you're denigrating an NBA player for being shaped like a WNBA player, but I know a lot of the Las Vegas Aces and some of the former Aces, in particular Asia Wilson and Kelsey Plum, and how emphatic they are in taking care of their bodies on and off the court, doing stuff that you're used to, like you as a former professional athlete or some of the Golden Knights in terms of recovery. And, you know, if they're practicing at 11, they're there at 9 for prep work, and then they're there 2 hours afterwards for treatment and whatnot. So to say that makes it sound like it's a bad thing when the WNBA players put in a lot of damn time to take care of their bodies.
I say one thing about these WNBA players, and I was shocked. I know these ladies are in great shape, but when I started going to the games and obviously meeting you there, obviously you're embedded with the organization. You know a lot about it, and just following you, these women are in phenomenal shape. When they take off that uniform and come to these press conferences, bruh, they are turning some heads. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are turning some heads. These ladies are in great shape. Even when you see them walking with their warm-up gear into the stadium with the style and the fashion that these ladies are expressing themselves now, I don't see any WNBA players looking like Cat Williams. These ladies are well put together, and they take pride in making sure that they fly for the camera. So Gil can miss me with that comment from the WNBA, where they already kind of get a bad rep. Now, you know, just leave them out of it. Let these ladies grow their sport.
Last one, Mark. You're paying attention to the softball and the pitcher at Texas Tech?
Oh, my gosh, young Kennedy, man. I know a lot of people were like, you know, she got paid way too much money. But what she is doing right now, she is one game away from winning a College World Series for Texas Tech. I know my guy Patrick Mahomes was there in the booth. I know he's going to be there again today. But Texas Longhorn, man, they've been in this position. They're really tough. Obviously, you know, this young lady got paid a lot of money, but she's made Texas Tech a lot of money, and she is much watched TV. And I watched the whole game the last couple of series just to see how good this young lady is. It's good for women's sports. Obviously, you know, this lady, you know, everybody's talking about the money that she, how much money is she making this school? You see the line for this young lady to give autographs, all these young kids coming up to her. I think it's really cool, man. And shoot, who's going to be the next? It's going to be somebody that's going to be next. I don't care if it's track or golf or whatever, but well-earned, and keep up the good work with women in sports because they keep getting a bad rep.
Mark, next week we'll check in on you, get more thoughts on Raiders camp because we got mandatory minis coming up around the league, and then also get into the arrival of the transfers, many of them coming in this week all around the country for college football. We appreciate the time, buddy. Thank you.
I appreciate you guys, too. No ketchup. No ketchup.
Wow, I did not expect such an anti-ketchup take from Mark McMillan. I like it. Coming up in about 12 minutes, we're going to talk to Ryan McKinnell, get you ready for UFC 316 this weekend.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island.
Yeah, just to follow up on the comments from Gilbert Arenas about Karl-Anthony Towns, on a podcast he said, yeah, he's targeted by all offensive players. It's him. It's his physical makeup. Long legs, short torso, big-ass feet. There's nothing he can do. He's built like a whole blanking bee. Called him a bitch. He's built like a female. Am I saying something wrong? He's built like a girl. He has girl hips. He's like a full WNBA player. Willie?
There's better. Here's. I don't know what he was trying to say or what he was trying to get across. And if exactly what he said is how he feels, then he's got to change his mindset. He could have very easily said, "Hey, he's got some work to do in the weight room during the off season. They're attacking him because of his lack of physicality. He's got a big body, but they know that they can attack him and dominate him. But to go the route that he did, again, going further than the B word and comparing him to a woman, I don't like the fact that by saying he's built like a WNBA player, there are WNBA players. We already know the argument, right, with males and female sports and that whole narrative and men against women. But the fact of the matter is, in comparison to what they do for their bodies, I just don't think that that's a fair comparison or narrative to use.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island.
All right, let's bring in one of our Friday regulars, Ryan McKinnell, Big Mac, back in Indiana, and the Pacers a winner last night. McKinnell, that was kind of cool, huh? And I'm sure the, I don't know, we're not coastal here, but the big cities around the country, the coastal elites are probably all mad that little Indy won.
Well, I mean, listen, Steve, you've been hearing it. First of all, happy Friday, everybody. Good to see you again. Willie, good to see you again. Been a little while. Yeah, I mean, all I was hearing going into this series, right, is as once it was locked up, OKC, Indiana was going to be that no one's going to watch, nobody's going to care. And I mean, to a point, I get it. These are not the biggest markets, but I struggle to see, like, I get it. I'm in the belly of the beast. I'm here in South Bend, Pacers fever, even for Northwest Indiana, which is typically a Chicago stronghold. The town, the city, the area is on fire. And I think when you look at the numbers, what Indiana's been able to do, what they've been able to manage, the comebacks, the defying statistics. I had a buddy send me a clip earlier today. He's like, serious question, like, is this one of the most, and it was about the odds and the percentages of some of the comebacks they've made, asking me, you know, is this some of the craziest stats you've seen, like, ever? And I whenever I think of statistics, I think of some of the crazy, like, Nolan Ryan numbers that you hear as time ends, you know, goes on, the crazy Barry Bonds statistics, things that don't seem real, they don't seem attainable, right? This Pacers team is entering some truly rarefied air, especially in the clutch categories. Tyrese Haliburton, what he's able to do. And to the people who are saying that nobody's going to watch or nobody cares, listen, just like you need flyover states to keep the economy running, right? You need flyover states to keep the sport going. I think every so often it's good for a final, and really this isn't any sport. This goes for baseball, basketball, NFL. I don't care, to make the little people, right? That's something Vegas did well for decades, making the smaller people, making the little people, the flyover states, whatever you want to call it, right, feel value. And I'm telling you, man, this Pacers team is doing something special. And again, I can't gauge it as much outside the bubble, but inside this particular bubble, it's been really, really fun to watch it take shape. And obviously, yeah, last night, I mean, a game winner, Halliburton doing what he's doing. How are you not, you know, kind of in awe of what they're able to put together right now?
Well, in a, I would imagine, maybe a fair comparison in terms of the people that are not, I don't want to say not familiar, but lack of interest in these teams, because in their eyes it's not a spectacular final, and they're going to, if you watch game one, like, well, let's tune into game one, let's just see what it's all about. There might have been a handful of people, when I say a handful, right, like 40% of the people that were watching last night, they were watching to say, see, we told you that this is boring, or they were looking for something right. Negative. It's the same comparison to those people all of a sudden that are going, oh, well, we didn't jump on board the WNBA until Caitlin Clark, or we didn't, well, but there are those of us that have been watching and seeing this. There are those of us that have known how special this kid Halliburton is. We know how special SGA is. We knew that, hey, this is the future, possibly, of the NBA in about 3-4 years, because who knows what's going to happen with the Lakers, the Knicks, the Celtics. So now they got a taste of it and they see it. And let's not forget what's going on in Indianapolis. And every time that Halliburton shows up to a Fever game, or sure, Caitlin Clark shows up to a Pacers game.
Yeah, Willie, it's a great point. And to take it a step further, the lapsed fan, right? Growing up in the 90s, obviously this area so centered around Michael Jordan. I mean, the whole country was, the whole world was, right? But you had Reggie Miller, you had Detlef Schrempf, you had this Indianapolis team, this Indiana team that had some really good squads. But over the last 25 or so years, you still have your diehards, but like take a fan like my mom, right? She doesn't care. She watches Stars. She'll tune in occasionally. She watches the Indy 500 every year, but she doesn't watch the Indiana Pacers every year, right? This is bringing back a certain section of lapsed fans, and if you can introduce them to the SGAs of the world, Halliburton's doing a great job of introducing himself and just making highlight reel shot after highlight reel shot. It's, I think, vital to the game. Again, it doesn't need to be every year. You can still have your Bostons and your LAs and your, you know, your Golden States, whatever the case may be. But I just think, to the lifeblood and to the health of the NBA going forward, I think it's great to have two teams like this, two stars like SGA, like Halliburton, going back and forth. Because the basically three quarters of that game was all about SGA and the Oklahoma City Thunder, right up until it wasn't, and the Pacers making it about themselves once again.
Well, if your mom's an old school Indiana sports fan, does that mean that she knows who Bobby Knight is, and when she gets mad, does she throw a chair across the living room?
Oh my gosh, we went to see Bobby Knight. We were Notre Dame season ticket holders for the early 90s, late 80s into the
You were yelling 90s. Rudy.
My mom was at the game that the Irish and Digger Phelps took down John Wooden in UCLA and snapped their consecutive game winning streak. She saw Magic Johnson play in high school up in Michigan. She saw Sean Kemp play at Elkhart when she was. She's a huge basketball fan, but even for a huge basketball fan like that, she needs a lead, right? She needs something, a headline, something to grab her. And this Pacers team, I mean, come on. Even if we weren't in Indiana, say that three times fast, right? Even if we weren't in this state, if you are a sports fan, how are you not paying attention to the uniqueness, to the numbers, to the wild statistics, to the comebacks, to the energy, to the talent that's on that floor every night? I think it's going to be a great finals. I think we're going 6, maybe 7 games. And I said it once Halliburton came back against the Knicks and hit the choke sign. I thought it was the Pacers series then. I think it's the Pacers series now.
Wow. Ryan McKinnell's with us. You followed Tim with the Bulls. You think the Knicks made a mistake here?
I do. I do. I side the numbers and what he's done for 5 years in New York, 2021 Coach of the Year, the constant improvement, that's all great. But I lived it firsthand in Chicago. Yeah, does he run hard? Absolutely. Does he play his stars too much? That can be debated. How much blame do you want to put him on D. Rose? The city's been debating that forever, right? But what you can't debate, Tom Thibodeau brings unique culture, unique work ethic, accountability. He is an absolute dog with a track record of winning. And even if you want to take away everything I just said, just focus on this. 5 years of constant improvement, and you just got the Knicks. And I know it's been talked about, but I'm going to say it again. You just got the Knicks to the first Eastern Conference final in 25 years, and you part ways with them perhaps to bring in a Jason Kidd. I don't understand the logic. It's two steps forward and four steps back for James Dolan. I don't know what New York is doing, but I can say that for decades. I don't know what New York basketball is doing. It doesn't make sense to me, Steve.
UFC in New Jersey this weekend with a pay-per-view. More intriguing fight to you, Merab O'Malley 2 or Kayla Harrison with the big step up going for the championship against Pena?
Steve, I think you'd agree with me on this, right? It's not even from a competitive standpoint, right? Because I think Kayla Harrison and Amanda Nunes, I think the line is accurate. I think Harrison is an absolute beast. We've been counting down the days for her to come over to the UFC and to have this opportunity to potentially become champion. So on that alone, from a historical factor, from the waiting game that we've been playing with Kayla Harrison, Olympic gold medalist, you know, PFL champion, the accolades are endless, and it's why the UFC has her in this spot. And potentially, seeing how it goes, the fight with Pena in 24 hours, a potential matchup with the GOAT herself, Amanda Nunes, could lay ahead. So with all that intrigue and with everything's going on, Harrison and Pena, for me, is the bigger sort of draw here. Also, we just saw Merab and Sean O'Malley, and I don't really care how many excuses O'Malley throws out there, and he had an injury, and, oh, he's not smoking weed anymore, and he's not playing video games, and he changed where he's training. I don't know if those are good things, right? I'm a firm believer of dance with who brought you, right? And, you know, marijuana, video games, and living a carefree lifestyle got Sean O'Malley to the absolute pinnacle of this sport. It feels like a bit of a cash grab. It feels a little bit rushed for the UFC. I hope they don't do any long-term damage to Sean O'Malley, because I expect him to go in there tomorrow and lose exactly like he did to Merab the first time. And then where does he go? Then where do the excuses come from? What sort of value in himself does he have? Because after one loss, this dude changed seemingly everything that he is as a person to try to rectify his problems in the cage, and I just don't really see that being the answer.
Ryan McKinnell, MMA expert, big on wrestling, sort of. He knows the sports for sure. All right, what's going on with John Jones? We ask every one of you guys, beginning of the week, we talk to our buddy RJ Clifford. Now it's on to you. Like, day by day here, is Jones ready to pull the plug? Is he just out?
Well, that's the crazy thing, right? You talk to RJ at the beginning of the week, you talk to me at the end of the week, and in those few days, the whole thing can change. John Jones is in a constant messaging war with the UFC, right? Teasing that he could possibly retire. He had basically said so much this week that, you know, he was vacating the belt, he's walking away, he can live with his legacy, his life is awesome, at least according to John Jones, although he spends a lot of time on Twitter trying to convince people that his life is so great. Now, today, literally just hours ago, the idea was floated, hey, would you be interested in a Francis Ngannou fight? You know, and that was a fight that was talked about, a super fight, before Francis left the UFC and Dana White and the UFC didn't re-sign him. And he went to the PFL, where he is now like the brand ambassador and president of PFL Africa. He still has one more fight left with the PFL, but assuming that he can get that fight out of the way, fulfill his obligations to PFL, coach of Francis Ngannou, Eric Nixick, said that he thinks Francis would be interested about a return to the UFC. Just a few hours ago, John Jones said, that intrigues me greatly, much more so, and I'm paraphrasing here, than a matchup with the flavor of the month, Tom Aspinall. He basically alluded to Francis, the legacy, the championship pedigree, the true super fight, and I do have to agree. I think Aspinall is the more dangerous challenge for John Jones, but I don't necessarily think John Jones is interested in what's more dangerous. I think he's interested in what sells, what gives me the attention, and what looks best on my record. And I think flash-wise, you know, just jumping off the page-wise, you can't deny that Francis Ngannou and John Jones is an absolute true super fight. Should have happened 3-4 years ago, but if we get it in the next 12 months, I'm not going to complain.
I feel like he's toying with Dana White because right now Dana is in I hate Francis Ngannou mode, so now he's going to have to change his mind. I want to spend 1 minute on this, and then we got to close out on the report of the White Sox being sold. Real quick, we talked about Hulk Hogan and kind of the duty is right now, and I found a TikToker who went out to a couple of signings because he's been at, like, CVS and grocery stores, and I guess he's got his new beard, so I'll give him a pop, Great American Beer. And some guy goes out there, and he was all mad because Hogan, I guess, was requiring everyone to buy the beer, and then he would sign a beer, but he wouldn't sign anything else. Fire this.
Here's video proof of Hogan being a liar, not caring about his fans, and especially not for the kids. Wait to the end. You'll hear what they told the kids.
Did he sign anything else besides the beer for you, buddy?
No.
No, right?
I'll just give you a heads up, because if you're a kid and you want to expect it. They didn't tell us that in Poughkeepsie when he was 2.5 hours late yesterday.
Be a man, Hogan, sign stuff for the kids. Come on.
Video proof that you weren't upset about it till I got there and said, be a man, Hogan. You weren't doing nothing for the kids till I got there.
The guy's doing a wrestling work at grocery stores yelling at Hogan as cops are like, dude, relax, okay? Please.
The last thing I want to do is stand up for Hulk Hogan here. Like, the very last thing I want to do is be like, well, you see, the thing about the situation with Terry Bollea, listen, I don't know. If they didn't say that you can't have extra items and they didn't make it explicitly clear before the signing, and if he was 2.5 hours late, then yeah, it would stick in line with what I know about Hulk Hogan, is that he's a terrible human being, right? And this wouldn't surprise me at all. But wrestling fans, to play devil's advocate, are the absolute worst. Steve, did you he's cutting a promo on Hogan in the store.
I know.
Be a man, Hogan. Show your face. Turn around and look me in the eye. You know what I mean? Like, what are we doing?
I know. Okay,
what
I got
are we doing, Steve?
I got 30 seconds left. Jerry Reinsdorf's eventually going to sell the White Sox to one of the Ishbias. It may take a while, though, but just the thought now of what's happening with the White Sox in the future.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Thank you so much, Jerry, for 2005 and the Bulls run due to Michael Jordan in the 90s. But he's cheap. He's always been cheap. He threatened to move the White Sox to Miami in 1993. Don't think I forgot about that. I talked to a buddy in Phoenix. I don't know a lot about Ishbia. I know he's a billionaire. And we were talking about this in relation to the Suns. By all accounts, to a guy who's kind of been around him, he said he's one of the good billionaires. I don't know how many of them are out there. I raise my eyebrow as well, but I'm going to take him at his word, and I'm going to pray to God that this market, a Chicago market that loves its sports, should never be toiling this low and having this bad of a team or a rebuild. I am very, very happy by this news. I'm holding on, Steve.
Big Mac, have a good weekend. Good energy. We'll talk to you, buddy.
See you, pal.
There he is, Ryan McKinnell. Yeah, Jerry Reinsdorf. He could sell it as late as 2034, though. Think about that.